Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Now, entering the octagon, Jaya, Brett, Sweet, Brain, Ramo, Juan, Antonio, and executive producer, Deshaun Davis. This is Cage Against the Machine.
Cage Cousins, we are back. The 247 cool down, sweet NBA. I'm by myself with my daily meditations and the aftermath of the UFC 247. A lot of controversial decisions, a lot going on that I saw, a lot going on that people didn't see that we should talk about. Hope all is well with you. I hope you are taking this February a little bit different, setting some new goals, accomplishing some things. It's Valentine's Day, not a very big fan of the Hallmark holiday, but it's always a good time, independent of the holiday or the fake holiday, to just grab somebody you're in love with and let them know how you feel. You don't have to spend any money. You could just like put your hand on their shoulder and just be like, yo, I'm in love with you, you know, and that doesn't even have to be romantic. You could just tell somebody. You know, for me, I built a new website for my martial arts school so they could watch videos, because that's how much I love my martial arts school and how much good they have done for my body. I'll probably do something amazing with my wife that involves some of the best gluten-free, dairy-free chocolate cake in the world. Shout out to Mariposa Bakery on 55th and Telegraph. I try to keep my dollars in my hood, so there's jobs. A lot to talk about. Thoughts and fights to make after this and catch up time. I'm so glad to hear so many of you enjoyed our conversation with Hector El Matador Farajado. When I have information on his next fight at Combates, I'll put that up. I'm actually working with Seawolf to do something so we could show his fight on Univision. And then have him come back and sign some autographs and do a fundraiser to really tie it in. But I can't say enough good things about that young man. And I'm just so proud of his journey. And, you know, he's supposed to send me. And that's, I can't highlight this enough. If you're investing in somebody, if you're mentoring, if you're teaching, you're supposed to be getting them to the point where they're sunning you and not in a competition level, but they're supposed to surpass and take it to the next level. Or else why are we doing this, you know? And I think that goes hand in hand with one of the philosophies that I was always taught in my martial arts school that, you know, it's better to use martial arts to heal broken people than it is to try to reinforce and bolster somebody who's already put together. Plus, 9 times out of 10, the people who are quote-unquote put together, you have a high percentage of just turning, you know, a violent MF into a super violent and dangerous person, right? So, martial arts does have that ability if people are training right, if they have the right coaches, if they have the right mindset, and they're using all the tools around them to really start understanding what is it that they need to do to get their own goals accomplished and get them there. Nothing like it. In fact, some of my friends yesterday I was training with asked me, yeah, don't you do stuff with businesses? And it was interesting to have this conversation because as highly competent and accomplished as they are in martial arts, they were slightly intimidated about running their own business. But when I made the connection, I said, well, no one told you that you had to come train. You train on your own. You've gotten this accomplishment yourself. You've put in the time. Entrepreneurship is no different. So you see how it connects in so many places. I won't bore you with any more of those philosophical details. Lot going on. I'm excited for the fights for the rest of February. Obviously, we'll have a decision, understanding who's next up for the light heavyweight belt with Jan Błachowicz versus Corey Anderson. And I've been talking about this for a while. I think Corey Anderson is going to be that dude. That's just my opinion. If he doesn't get past John Blachowicz will be that dude. But of course, we'll have some hold up in the light heavyweight because, you know, the controversy we're going to talk about again. And then the fight after, you know, my heart, UFC Auckland. And how cool it is to be able to know that I can just turn on my television, make some snacks, bring my family into the living room, and we can watch a UFC card in, you know, their home city. It just means the world to me. Even to the point where my mother-in-law, who is not a violent person, who really does not like seeing people punch each other, can get into the UFC because she understands it's putting her country and her town on the map. And so I'm really excited. So I can't say it enough. I just enjoy the programming that comes out of the UFC and has come out since the sale, and how I can count on that to be there for me. In the same way that my brothers who watch NBA kind of know all the game schedule, or Raiders fans kind of can see that ahead of time and understand what they're going through. So I'm really excited about that. I did not get to watch early prelims. And I guess I should have loaded that in on my phone and just listened to them as I drive, which I've done in the past. One of the sort of beefs that I have right now with the way that things are laid out with ESPN is that they do a lot of bookings with other sports at the same time. So if you go to a bar to watch it and you walk in, the prelims are running literally back to back against the Duke versus North Carolina basketball game, which, if you're into college basketball, I'm not. That's really important. And so it's going to be very hard for someone to switch over to this fight, because there's a whole audience that's there to watch that at a sports bar, which is a little frustrating to me. The other piece of frustration that I kind of had about it was, you know, I just don't think that the load-in is very clear to many of the people. It's really hard for folks to figure out. I'm still, like, some fights I still have to go back to YouTube TV, which I'm about to cancel because I just don't use it enough. And it's like, it's, you know, just generally I think the ESPN product is really good, but why can't we just put everything in the same place at the same time, and it would make a lot more sense to folks? And I can't be the only one thinking this, but I feel like I have to do all this sort of tech support, AV support, for you know, Seawolf, which does a great job, but it's a non-intuitive process, that ESPN. So I don't really necessarily blame them. I just feel like with the early prelims and whatever, they always kind of hide that and bury those prelims. So I was glad to see that Journey Newsom won. I knew he was going to win. That's why I picked him, because I wanted to win in my fantasy league. Looks like there were some amazing fights also. I'm going to try to do a better job of figuring out how to get that watched. And then just a little tangent going back. If you don't watch basketball, that's interesting. That's fine. That's cool. You don't have to. I don't. But what was interesting about that Duke versus North Carolina game is that most people don't realize that North Carolina and Duke is really well known for the economists that come out of their schools. So a lot of the people who watch basketball, it's really the statistical mapping that's happening at those schools is a good example of what's happening with the economy, because that's kind of the fruit they bear, right? I was having this conversation with Austin about this, where I said, you know, people want to go to Stanford and get an MBA thinking they're going to start a tech company, but most of the people who start tech companies from Stanford came out of the law school. So you could judge the tree by the fruit it bears, and the people who come out of North Carolina and Duke all tend to be high-level economists. So when the time I started watching the prelims, it was Chaos Williams, which I'm kicking myself that I should be punching myself the way Chaos Williams was punching his opponent. Because I could have grabbed him in the draft, but I was thinking to myself, I've never seen this brother fight before. And the way he looks, sort of like, I don't know. And, you know, he's not, and somebody, you know, you would want to think, for me, I'm like, well, his mama named him Chaos, right? He literally came out his mama, and she's like, he could be Billy, he could be Robert, he could be, you know, LaRondo. Instead, I'm going to call him Chaos. And not just Chaos with the C, Chaos with the K. A little disappointed in myself that I didn't see that as a hint. But my fear was, here is a heavy puncher. And if you've been listening to this show for a while, you know my bias. I think when it comes to a lot of brothers, they tend to be one-dimensional. And they carry this 30-year-old MMA trope that I'm really not feeling, which is, hey, my stand-up is so good, I don't have to worry about grappling or wrestling. Or my grappling and wrestling is so good, if it goes to the ground, I'm gonna end the fight. That's just not the truth. That's just not the truth. That's not the art. This is mixed martial arts. That's just not the truth. So my fear with Chaos was, yeah, he's probably got one dimension, but have I seen enough to see him tested on the ground? But I mean, God. One thing I will say, what I was impressed with, and it made me feel like I should figure out how to get him on my team, was the way that he could transition from pretending to do a takedown and setting his opponent off and then following up with strikes. I was like, yo, it's the same level of sort of high level Sancho stuff that I really appreciate when you see somebody who's got a base in like Bagua and wrestling, and then they also got nasty like boxing and kickboxing. I think the best example is when you think about the second fight between Junior Dos Santos and Cain Velasquez. I'm not gonna say that Cain Velasquez is a Sancho player. So what I am trying to get across is with his wrestling and his kickboxing, JDS didn't know when that guy was gonna wrestle. He didn't know when he was gonna strike. And as soon as JDS would set his feet to defend the wrestle, the takedown, he'd get hit and lit up with the strikes. As soon as he would move to try to deal with the strikes and get on his feet, he'd get taken down. It was just a masterful, that second fight. It was vengeful. Chaos Williams has that same ability. My one fear with him, though, is the way he throws those looping haymakers, and a lot of cats do this, big guys do this. They tend to like to throw things from their hips, from their elbows. The gloves are not up by their head. It's dangerous. You're going to get clipped. You're going to get clipped. This is just science now. This is just what we call fighting. So the way, I wonder, you know, I remember we used to see that with, what was this, Oluwase Bambuse. I remember he had the same problem. He's coming there knocking people out. As soon as he met a really good striker, a really good grappler, all that talk didn't work. So that is my absolute fear for the future of Chaos Williams. But other than that, that fight was tremendously entertaining as far as I'm concerned. I enjoyed that. That was a good start. And it was funny because one of the young homies who was there, who was just kind of getting back into UFC watching, he was like, God, that was really violent. I was like, exactly. Exactly. That's why we're watching. And then, you know, obviously I missed the Miles Johns, Mario Bautista, but we did have the Lauren Murphy versus Andrea Lee, which was interesting. How did you guys score that fight? A lot of controversy, a lot of controversy. And I was really, you know, the sarcastic, fantastic a-hole in me still thinks that was a really interesting matchup, because you've got like the former meth addict versus, you know, the divorcee of the racist, right? It's like, you know, should have been called Battle in the Backwater. And I can say these things. I have a white mother. So I guess what was intriguing to me, how did you guys score that? Because Andrea Lee feels like the judging robbed her. Many other people feel like that didn't work. I felt like when Andrea Lee got hit by Lauren Murphy, she backed her up at least 3 inches. The counter argument is maybe that Andrea Lee got more volume off. I would have to look at the fight again. In my mind, I think I would be a lot more comfortable with a draw. I think it was a split decision. I think I'm okay with that. I think it should be a split decision. Draw, at least. It wasn't as clear cut, but it was definitely evenly matched. And you know, kudos to Lauren Murphy for really just turning it around. I was interested to see, I guess she's no longer at MMA Lab, and appears that she has come over to Houston. So she's at the same camp as Derek Lewis, you know, and doing that sort of Houston style Muay Thai. So that was really, really intriguing to me. I enjoyed the sport. It was great. I'd like to see a little bit more out of Lauren Murphy to be talking about calling people out. I do want to see what happens with her old tough cast member in Roxanne Modafferi. That would tell me a lot. That'd be interesting. So that'll be a tale of the tape for the future. Then we had James Krause versus Giles. Or Giles, however you want to call it. Maybe his name is Giles. I'm going to call him Giles because Giles sounds like the butler. And I don't like that. I don't like calling black men the butler. Let's see. How do we talk about this? James Krause, tough contender twice. Vegas coach, sort of institutional UFC. They like him a lot. Megan Anderson's coach. He was actually there to coach another fighter. And the original opponent against Giles, you know, was pulled out. And so James Krause says, I'll take the fight. So probably wasn't training for any fight. Probably the cardio wasn't there. But not only, this is a guy who is fights at lightweight and then goes up to welterweight. So there's a problem there for me. You're already at 155 and then you come up to 170. Should probably go from 155 to 165 and then maybe try it out at 175 if they have that division, but they don't. He jumps into a fight at 185, right? It's a very different fighter. It's a different sport at 185. 185 is the premier. I mean, this is where people get finished, right? People just get finished at 185. It's facts. People kind of coast at 170. A lot of submissions at 155, not a lot of knockouts. 185, people get knocked the F out, if not choked out after a bad punch or a bad kick. It's dangerous there. This is the division of Anderson Silva. This is now the division of Israel Adesanya. This is a dangerous place to fight. This is how you sell the league. Krause, you got to give him, I mean, what a war dog, what a soldier, what a fighter. Anytime, any place he jumps up, not one, two, three weight classes to take this fight on short notice. Comes in with what I would think I would do in his shoes, believing that the greatest asset you have is your jiu-jitsu. You come in, you sort of like stuff this guy's power shots, take him down, get his back, and try to choke him out. And because it's early, they're not sweaty. So it's easy to kind of get that tight traction going with the grip. Unfortunately, I could tell about 20 seconds into him trying to set up the choke that it wasn't gonna happen. Giles is wrestling and jiu-jitsu defense was just too much. It was just, you know, the weight of it and the strength that you could just tell the three weight classes had done enough. And, you know, Krause's opponent wasn't tired enough, so he could just outmatch technique with strength. Which is one of those mythologies that people don't want to talk about. You know, for me, when I train jiu-jitsu, I'm not doing it just to do strength. I'm trying to do the technique because it's part of layering my mind. And it really does some work in the analytical side of the brain and heals it with the creative side. Adisa could probably tell you more about that in detail. And that's what's interesting to me. But it was very clear. Giles was just able to just power through it. And you could see it coming. He kept rolling the shoulder. And before you know it, boom, he had reversed it. He's on top. He's starting to rain down blows on Krause, who doesn't have the strength necessarily to hold him in place and keep that from happening. And it's sad because I kind of feel like if I ran that fight back and they had never seen each other before, and Krause had 9 weeks to train, he probably would have won because he probably would have been able to weather the storm. His veteran ability and his striking, he was just really able to kind of neutralize and defend. He has really good hand defense against some of those power shots and really good sort of slips. And was just able to come under some of those really nasty power shots. And someone should tell Giles, you can't lead your punches with starting with uppercuts. It's just not gonna land. He didn't land a single one. He thought he was gonna get him off. He was late, you just don't. I'm not gonna tell you where you put the uppercuts, because I don't want to give away my secrets, but I'll tell you, you don't lead with them. I'll know what you think you're doing. This ain't Street Fighter, homie. Anyways, so as we saw, by all match, that should have been Giles' fight to dominate, right? Because he's got, again, 3 weight divisions above. Correct me if I'm wrong. If I'm wrong, I'll shut up. He's also had 9 weeks to train. He should have just blew through Krause. Instead, Krause's experience really showed. And so, Giles snuck a decision by. It's nothing I would write home about. If I was in Giles' shoes, I'd go back to the gym. I'd feel a little humiliated. I'd feel frustrated. I couldn't take a happiness with that. Because by all statistical means, I would have knocked out Krause. And I didn't. And I should look and see why I didn't. And so that was a big lesson learned. I'm sure Krause has favored himself with the bookings and worked something out by taking that fight. He ain't gonna get no extra money. We learned that. We learned that from, case in point. If Cowboy Cerrone only got a flat $200K for fighting McGregor and no pay-per-view points, then James Krause ain't getting no extra money. He ain't getting no fight of the night. Despite what Dana says, he said he gave them both $50K. Yeah, that's about it. But that was prearranged. Krause could have laid on the ground like Nick Diaz and he would have gotten that $50K because he took the fight. But the point is, he should be getting some extra. We should be talking about $150K because I just came in and saved your prelim. But that's just not how the system works. Maybe it will be when one day if I'm an executive at UFC. But it's not that way today. So we have to accept some of the sad tragedies of it. So it was interesting. What I will say is I was really impressed with there was a lot of bantamweights really stepped it up. And the crowd cheering, I couldn't tell if it was for, you know, going back, I couldn't tell if it's because Andrea Lee is from Shreveport and she was getting the sort of Texas, Oklahoma, Louisiana support, or Lauren Murphy, because she's moved her camp to Houston, she was getting the love. But I was just really happy to see the amount of support for women fighters and for the lighter weights. I've often been disappointed by the casuals who have all the cheers for the heavier weight classes, where, you know, heavyweight is just damn boring. It's just boring. These guys don't move. So how are you going? But again, the casual gets excited about the slugfest. So that was really exciting to see that there's a new type of fan coming in. But this also previewed a bit of the controversy, which is these judges who makes you wonder, you know, where did you get your job from? What are you looking at? And this is going to come up in the later rounds and the later fights. It was just like, what? Now we're going to talk about the main card. And I think the theme that you're going to hear from me a lot on this, to frame the conversation, is the difference between winning the fight and winning the competition. Winning the fight is what I think many fighters saw, which is who scored the most amount of strikes, who got takedowns that were effective, who got the reversals, who was able to get themselves out of bad positions, who was able to defend. Winning the competition effectively is, are you doing what the judges in Houston believe is winning the fight? This theme is going to come up all through the main card. If it's already been sort of aggravated in the prelims, it's real ugly in the main card. So our first fight, Derek Lewis versus Ilir Latifi. As predicted, you know, you have the Houston crowd. Derek Lewis comes out swinging and banging, throwing a flying knee. That's cool. Easy to do when you're a little bit higher than the guy you're fighting. And speaking of higher, that guy was hilarious backstage talking about smoking, you know, 24/7 before he got into the ring, and USADA possibly kicking him out for 2 years. That guy is hilarious. Which shows that, you know, Derek Lewis is many things. Talented fighter, amazing social media poster, but also just transparent. Just deeply transparent about understanding that there are systems and holes in the system that are happening in the UFC. And something as simple as marijuana, which probably shouldn't be illegal, probably shouldn't be a banned substance by the Fighting Commission, but it is, that he understands how to essentially game the system and clean it out before he's tested. As opposed to something like cocaine, which isn't actually a banned substance from the Fighting Commission's, but it should probably be. It should probably be listed as a performance-enhancing drug. Now, I have friends who are fighters, and they're going to say, what are you talking about? There's no way that cocaine should be in the same category as something like EPO or, you know, that good old Eastern European growth hormone. Well, I argue with you, dear sir. I grew up in the 80s. I'm from North Oakland, South Berkeley. I've had to put hands, unfortunately, on a crackhead or two. And anyone who's spent any time fighting with cocaine users knows that they are blessed with superhuman strength. Now, some of y'all are thinking about the cocaine users, you know, like the crazy girl at the party or the dude who gets knocked out with one punch. No, those are the lifetime cocaine users. I'm talking about when they're early on and you just be hitting them with dangerous shots and they keep coming on. And also, How many stories or how many times have you seen somebody under the influence climb up a wall without a fire escape and, you know, break into somebody's house? So that's my opinion. I think cocaine and its derivative forms should be a controlled PED. I digress. What did we learn from Alir Latifi versus Derek Lewis? Derek Lewis clearly understood how to work with the judges. You know, I didn't find the fight that entertaining. I thought there was a lot of performance pieces. Like, it was nice to see Derek move through the air, but I knew he was gaming the system and giving the appearance of stuff. It was interesting to see him land a knee on Latifi as he shot in and not knock Latifi unconscious, which spoke to sort of the ineffectual nature of those techniques. And that's not to say Latifi isn't tough, but if Derek Lewis was putting the force behind his knees and his moving forward the way he does with his hands and has in the past against people like Volkan and, you know, the people that he's just laid out on the canvas, Alir Latifi will be slept. I heard the bar cheering. I heard the crowd cheering. I did not find it that interesting. And again, I'm biased. I've gotten sour off the heavyweight division ever since kind of Kane broke his body. I mean, there's some folks who get me out of bed for it. You know, I definitely enjoyed the DC Stipe rivalry. Ngannou, the way he snapped Overeem's head back. But ultimately, I'm not super excited about it the way other folks are. So I kind of felt like that was just some candy to the kids for a while. The next matchup, I believe, was Dan Ige or Dan Ige. Anyway, you want to say it, I'm going to trust Hector, versus Mirsad Bektic, who surprisingly, you know, I guess this is a testament to Josh Emmett's power, because Josh Emmett knocked the guy out with a jab, and Ige was landing some shots. Not enough, but Bektic certainly was not hurt. And he was threatening. It was really interesting. I was looking at it for a minute, like answering a question here in my own weird MMA math. And that question was, what can we use as a proxy to figure out? On one hand, we have Habib's training partner and jiu-jitsu coach in Dan Ige. But on another hand, you have Mirsad Bektic, who's out of TriStar, who is a student of GSP. And the fight I'd love to see, which would just be intriguing to me, is Habib versus GSP. And so I started to understand that in the wrestling exchanges, it seemed like Bektic was just that much more dominant. Sure, Ige was able to use his jiu-jitsu to minimize the threat, but I actually thought that Bektic won that fight. But I think Ige understood how at the end of the round to put on performances that impressed the coaches and the judges to really sort of get it done. And that's what I think you saw. So Ige definitely won the competition, even though in my opinion, I think Bektic won the fight. Probably not going to be popular. Probably going to make people upset with that. The next fight we had was, in the main event, was Juan Adams versus Justin Taffa. Now, I feel very torn about Tafa because although, you know, definitely ethnically Samoan, so shout out to all my Poliuses. He's a Kiwi. So birthright, blood, he comes from West Auckland. How do I describe West Auckland? Known for some of its gang activities and its hands. And my time traveling around West Auckland, it reminded me a lot of places of it reminded me of East Oakland. Places of it remind me of East Palo Alto, which is weird to say. West Auckland remind me of two eastern cities. But from what I can talk to you about the folks that I know there, you know, there's a lot of culture of just people swing there a lot. You grow up fighting. I felt very comfortable there. I was trying to buy a house. My wife was like, "You crazy. Crazy." Anyways, I guess why I bring that up is even though Tafa is a Kiwi, he trains over in Australia. So very much a 2.0 of Mark Hunt. And for years, there's been the alliance of sort of like New Zealand versus Australia. But when it comes to sports, nah, bruh. Kind of the way Barry teams and LA teams don't get along is that similarity. So what was also interesting was him fighting Juan Adams, Juan Adams being a member of Jackson Winklejohn. I was expecting such a game plan, man. I was expecting Juan Adams with his reach, with his coach, Greg Jackson, actually being in his corner. I was expecting a more methodical, powerful, better grappling. And that's just not what I got at all. Tafa made short work of him very quickly. And I don't know what that was about. I guess interesting because Tafa said in his post-fight from the last fight that he had, I think it was UFC 242, when he got knocked out, he says a lot of that was the product of going too fast and I wanted to slow down. Now, when he got knocked out, that was the second round. So to see him within 30 to 40 seconds of the first round switch, throw this uppercut, and just demolish and bring Juan Adams to unconsciousness. I was like, well, I thought we had a different game plan here, but clearly he saw something that worked. Where do we go with this? Tafa's star is rising. Juan Adams is on a two-fight losing streak. Something must change. Something must change. Juan, if he is to win, has to fundamentally look at these things. He was not able to out-wrestle Greg Hardy, and he was supposed to be the better wrestler. And then in terms of striking, he was not the better striker against Tafa. If he's not able to kind of like put it together, this is going to be a threat. Where is he going to go from here? He's got to figure it out. Hopefully. So I guess I'm a little bit worried for this guy. But then at the same time, I wonder if everything he says adds up. You know, I remember his thing about fighting Greg Hardy was he didn't like Greg Hardy because he didn't like people who put hands on women. Yet he trains with John Jones. But I'm learning in MMA math from the things I see on Twitter. ethics and morality doesn't count, has even weirder MMA math than the combat stuff. So I'm figuring it out. I guess that was a nice warm-up to kind of finish off the main event and really get it popping. And now it is that time for the co-main event, which, you know, the Jones haters are going to tell me when I say this should have been the main event. They'll just say, you know, you're just a Jones hater. But that's cool. I see you, Eli. How you doing? We'll get to you. So, Valentina Bullet Shevchenko. If I hear her name right, I can probably say it right. But I actually have been watching her for years, and I pay for her pay-per-views. So I don't know that I actually have to get her name right all the time. But I understand what she does in the ring. I'm an actual fan. I know her history. So I'm not sure I will always get her name right, but I do know that I am a fan, not a casual. Versus the blonde fighter, Chokagian. I don't even know if I remember her first name. Does it even matter right now? I mean, when you give yourself, and I tried not to be too mean about this, but, you know, I was talking about this on the podcast, and I was doing the little clips for Instagram. When you're trying to distinguish yourself and put yourself out there, you know, as a brand, like, you need to think about that ahead of time, right? You can't just open a cafe in Berkeley and call it the coffee shop and expect to stand out. You're going to lose. Where I live, there's a coffee shop literally on every block, okay? Literally. So for you to just call yourself the coffee shop, you're asking for trouble. So in a division like the flyweight, where most of the fighters are blonde, wait a minute. Most of the female fighters are blonde. Why would you call yourself the blonde fighter? Like you were in some division, right? And you were fighting, and all the girls had dark and red hair, and, you know, you needed to stand out, so you call yourself the blonde fighter. Come on. Come on, folks. Not okay. Not okay. But I'm a little torn. You know, I always have this issue. Like, I really, on a lot of levels, I do like the Henzo Mafia. I really, obviously, think John Donahue is just a genius. Just a genius. Like most Kiwis are. Just a brilliant academician who will back it with practicum, right? Like, he draws his theoretical teachings from simulation after simulation after simulation of really running it back and making sure he understands what works before he runs his mouth. That's a lot of the Kiwis I've interacted with. That's why I enjoy them so much. You know, and Henzo is that guy. And I think, to be honest, Henzo opening the door for realistic martial arts for many Black and Latino men in New York, is super important, you know, that generation after sort of like the Black Spades and Assassins and dudes doing these 52 hand blocks, they really got exposure to real save your life street fighting in the form of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu because of Henzo Gracie. And he wasn't just, you know, hey, I'm gonna take you down and choke you out. This is a guy who could bang. And he showed that even in his late coming back and late in his career, could come in there and just land a punch and knock out a grown ass man. And I still come back to that famous Instagram post, or I think social media post, it was from Vine, where some guys tried to jump Henzo and he gave him the business and posted about it afterwards. Like, let me know if you need a rematch. And that's phenomenal. And that's really important. And then you have the third part of the trilogy in Mark Henry's camp out in Jersey. I love the people who train out there. I've always been a huge Frankie Edgar fan. I've always really messed with that dude. I think I've said it before. I'm a huge, huge Zabit fan. I am fanatical about Muslim Sokolov for obvious reasons, right? In addition, Corey Anderson has my attention, my undivided attention. That is the true dark horse of the light heavyweight division. On Saturday, you guys will see what I'm talking about. And if I'm wrong, I will swap out the chicken this week for the crow. So that's huge to me. And then, you know, there's some other standouts in that camp that are pretty interesting, that I enjoy over there that I think are really coming up. There's a lot of great hands. I just actually really like how Mark Henry coaches. And I also respect that his job is not based on his fighters. So he runs a pizza restaurant and then he coaches, which I think keeps the integrity. I'm very questionable about people who coach full time because it seems like they're in the fighters' pockets and they make decisions based on the pockets. And I guess that's where I come from on a lot of stuff, sort of like managing artists. I kind of feel like you should already have your business and then you manage artists and add to it rather than, you know, you push artists to do things that are going to get you the bag. And then that artist, dude, I don't know. So, you know, with Katlyn Chookagian, what was going to be interesting was her ability to move around, definitely to have that sort of Weidman, Longo, Sarah Longo kind of boxing connecting to her jiu-jitsu. I was expecting her to be far more aggressive with her wrestling. And I gotta be honest, man, like I really am trying to free myself of some of these resentments this year. That's been one of my big commitments to myself. I have so much trouble letting go of my disdain for Chris Weidman and anything he touches. And I'm obvious about it. Like, I love Anderson Silva. And, you know, it wasn't just that he knocked out Anderson Silva, it's that he broke his leg. So I just always been bitter about that. I've been superly bitter. And I'm not the only one who was bitter. Jacare was bitter about that. You notice the way that he wounded Chris Weidman. That's what that was about. So I've always felt like anything that touches Weidman is on that. And then, you know, Weidman makes some statements sometimes. I have friends from New York that says that's how everybody in Long Island sounds, right? So they'll defend that and say, you know, somebody like Aljamain Sterling will say the same thing and he's Jamaican. Yeah, I'm Jamaican too. And I tell my family members, you full of it. You full of it thinking that, voting this way and all that. But anyways, I don't want to get down to that rabbit hole. So I wanted to keep an open mind. It was really hard. You know, I thought that Katlyn had the ability to challenge Valentina. Not in the sense of really being somebody who was going to really test her, but somebody who was going to expose how good the bullet is. Maybe I haven't been this clear. I feel like when I'm sparring and I've been able to do some cardio that week and I'm feeling better and the sun's out and I'm not fighting a sickness and I got 8 hours of sleep, you know, I haven't put in hella terrible hours at work, I could go in there and turn into Zabit for a good 3 rounds, right? Flying kicks, spinning kicks, all this stuff is just, hey, and it's fun. And also maybe that only happens against the white belts. Maybe I just do that when I'm sparring somebody my size who's new, or I'm sparring somebody who's a little bit smaller, or I'm sparring a new big guy who's getting a little too feisty and I need to show him to back up. But you catch me on the streets and you try to take my life and I will turn into Valentina the Bullet over 1 second. I love the way she fights. I get the way she fights. That has generally been how I have fought in the street and in my life. I respect it. In fact, there's a moment where we're at Seawolf and she landed the big spin kick and half the room called out my name, right? Like everybody else was like, oh, and everybody else was like, sweet. They know what happens. They know what happens. I don't know. I could go into a long conversation about it. I don't want to give away all my magic. I would just say that the good Lord blessed me with kung fu in the face of my enemies and gave me the ability to do a spinning back kick that will smite evil from thy jaw. But I love the way Valentina fights. She is tied for my favorite female fighter. And it's a three-way tie. I love the way the Bullet fights, and I love the way Rose fights, and because they train together for so long, it's their styles that I find so amazing and compelling and touches my soul. And I think the world next month will see why I'm in love with Weiling Zhang as well. I'm almost torn, like, right now in terms of, I've really tried not to be emotionally connected to fighters ever since Anderson and Rashad, because it really hurt. Even trying to deal with Cormier, man, after that, you know, watching Jones do him in and then watching Stipe, man, you know, it was a little heartbreaking. Right now, obviously, those girls I mentioned got under my skin. And in terms of men, Adesanya, Volkanovski, Hooker, those are like, I love those guys, man. I love those guys. They feel like they eat dinner with me. Yeah, watching that Hooker fight against Barbosa, man, that made me sick. God, I thought Dan was such a soldier, but God, that was, man, I was having trouble eating dinner that night. I was kind of so heartbroken. But you got, again, this guy's mind, he's not going to back down. He's like, I want to show you that I'm one of the best world kickboxers. And he got farther than anybody else has against the dude, which is going to be so interesting when he goes against Felder in 2 weeks. So, which is a real test of the boxing and the jiu-jitsu. So, back and forth, and it's kind of formulaic, right? Valentina starts in, she tests the range. The first thing she does is she throws a kick to the legs. And it's light. And the reason why it's light is to test the distance and the reaction time. And it works. And then she starts chopping at the legs, opening up the legs. So the stance is a little bit off. Chukagian can't deal with it. Chops the legs, chops the legs, chops the legs. Chukagian tries to adjust, and what that does is it allows the belly to be exposed. I have a theory. I can't prove it. I bet you science, now that I think about it, I bet you science will prove me wrong. But my wonder is, do women have less core muscles than men? Would they have to because of the reproductive organs that they have? Let me tell you why I'm thinking this theory, and I'd be interested to hear what you guys have to say. I just don't know. I need to get somebody who's really good at anatomy on the show, especially women's anatomy, to kind of like call BS on me. I noticed that women, and I used to think maybe it was lack of conditioning, but they seem as cut as the men. I noticed that women cannot handle those belly kicks that Valentina throws. The front switch kick to the belly. I have yet to see a female fighter, even Amanda Nunes, cannot do more than three. After the second one, it changes the fighter's entire strategy. The first, I mean, a good example of this is obvious, and credit where credit is due. I can't say this enough. If you have ESPN Plus, go and watch the documentary Detail, hosted by Daniel Cormier. Obviously, I'm biased. I'm a big Cormier fan. But his analysis And the way they use animation and lighting and highlights to show a fighter style is impeccable. And it just really is sort of, man, it just, I nerd out on that stuff all day. So this month they did Valentina. One of the things they point out over and over again with the Jessica Eye, right? She hits Jessica Eye in the belly one time. Crack, hand comes down a little bit. She hits her in the belly again. Boom, hands are really down. She throws a question mark kick. Jessica falls for it, drops her hands to block the belly. Leg goes up right in the face. Why do I bring this up? Chookagian was studying tape. She thought, that's not gonna be me. Belly kick one. Ooh, that hurt. Belly kick two. Oh, I don't like that one. Belly kick three. Maybe I'm gonna transform a little bit. So she looks like she's gonna start catching leg kicks, right? Or catching a belly kick. So this time, Valentina knows that this person's watching footage, so she feints like she's gonna throw the belly kick again, then do a question mark. The hands go to protect the face, and sure enough, spinning back kick that comes down. Blap! Cracks Chookagian soundly. And then she follows up with a switch axe kick. I mean, this woman is no joke. Had she landed that, she probably would have not only broken Chookagian's nose, but technically, what that is for is even if you don't hit the nose, if you hit the shoulder, you're taking out that bone. That bone is so brittle there that it lands, right? And even if you survive it, a really good Sancho player will pull you down with it and turn it into a takedown. How do I know? It happens to me, unfortunately, far more than I care to admit from my coach. It's a really nasty technique. But to see somebody who can go from that level of power, speed, accuracy, and flexibility by throwing the spinning back kick and then coming back with the axe kick, you gotta love it, you gotta respect it. After that, the fight was pretty much over. Chookagian, in pain, forced to her place, thought, well, the striking ain't working, so let me try to force the takedown. Surprise, surprise, the takedown gets turned on her. She's on the bottom. And something that's very interesting, you know, again, I thought Chookagian would have been the stronger wrestler given her access to Sterling and to Weidman, and as well as the tutelage of Donaher. And in round three, Valentina really put it on her on the ground in a way that she was using round one to do on Jessica Eye to soften her up. Valentina grabs the lethal for her, side control, moves into the crucifix, rains, punches down, refs come, break it up, it's done. Victory by TKO. Bunch of people look at me and say, I think that's an early stoppage. Early stoppage? What was Katlyn Chookagian gonna do? She was getting punches rained down on her. She wasn't gonna get out of that crucifix. Have you seen? Can you name a fight in the UFC where somebody got out of the crucifix? First, okay, let's start there. Secondly, if they have, were they doing it by trying to pop their foot over? She did not have the flexibility or the strength or the defense to be able to pop her hips up and go over, so that wasn't gonna happen. You can go back and watch the replay. It's not there. You know, there's a fantasy mind that tells you that Chookagian was gonna get out. It wasn't early. Only thing that was gonna happen if that fight continued was categorically, there's gonna be a concussion. Katlyn Chookagian was going to get traumatic brain injury by staying on the ground and having hard punches hit her head on the ground against the canvas. Bad idea, not a fan. Live to fight another day. Good stoppage by the referees. What's next for the Bullet? Who's in that division? Well, JoJo Calderwood. Jessica Maia. Roxanne Modafari. Man. Compelling. And so, out of those three, who do you think it's going to be? Well, we can answer that question. Lauren Murphy just called out Modafari. So if those two go at it, we can have that figured out, right? Winner of that could make an answer. If Modafari wins, then she should be the contender, in my opinion. Calderwood, I think, is higher. I think she's higher, so if Valentina wanted to stay active this year, she could already book that fight. I don't really like that fight for Calderwood. I think you know, Calderwood is training partners with Modafari. So I almost feel like, I don't mean to be insulting, but I think Valentina fighting Calderwood is like a warm-up for Modafari. I think Modafari is better on the ground. I think Calderwood's a better, well-rounded striker. But I'm actually seeing that I feel like Modafari is developing much more power in her hands now. And if she could learn to transfer that to her kicks and get some flexibility. Oh, boy. Oh, boy. She could be a contender. It'll be an interesting fight. There's nobody in the flyweight division that's a threat to the bullet. There's no threat. And that's not to be mean or anything. That's just, these are numbers. What it will do is it's going to make everybody below her step their game up. And you've heard me say it time and time again. You have to have tyrants to run a division to make everybody step their game up. And it's going to come up again and again. If you did not have Anderson Silva, you would not have gotten a Chris Weidman who trained exclusively just to find the hole in Silva. And then by Weidman going after broken Brazilians, it set the ball in motion to shuffle that division and then eventually give us, and openly he said that, the Israel Adesanya, who's going to be a champion for a very, very long time. If you did not have Max Holloway really shape up that 145 division. And I know what you're thinking. Well, what about McGregor? Did McGregor ever defend the 145 belt? Nah. So that's not even... He found a hole in Aldo. He trained a hole in Aldo. He worked it with mind games. He exploited the hole and he moved on to 155. That's just what happened. So Aldo's game was studied by Max Holloway and he figured it out. More times than one, okay? We saw that. And I still think it's going to be very interesting to see what Aldo does to Cejudo. Like, I'm very excited about that fight. Because I think Aldo's actually got Cejudo's number. And if he doesn't, El Matador does. I need to figure out how to holler at, like, Sean Shelby and get that transfer over. And again, back to the 145. I love Max. Brain loves Max. I don't see Max winning in a rematch against Volkanovski. I think Volkanovski becomes the new tyrant. I think Usman figured out what Tyron Woodley was doing to dominate and defend at 170, and then figured out what he had to do to take that strategy and beat Tyron. And I think he's going to be very dominant in the 170 division, which is why he was my first fantasy pick of this year. Sorry, Izzy, I would have picked you, but the guys in my fantasy league, all of a sudden, now they want to be picking Kiwi fighters and Sancho players after all of a sudden I've been doing that for 4 years, and they would make comments like, oh, who is that? Now all of a sudden they want to take your picks. I'm sorry, the world knows who you are. I'm going to keep running my mouth about you, though. So we've seen all that. So again, Valentina is going to make women's MMA very credible. And again, everybody was training to beat Ronda. And once they learned how to, women's MMA exploded. So these are all very good things. I think what we really need to do is find somebody to become a tyrant at 145 for women And then they have to learn how to beat that. And as we see, the straw weight is becoming very competitive. I don't know that the bantamweight is deep enough yet. I think there's too many people who fluctuate. So I think that's not to take anything away from Amanda. I just think she is leveling up and her opponents are not. And that's a huge factor in the dominance that she's portraying. So overall, I'm very happy about that. It's very interesting also to see Halle Berry came out. I don't know if that's like UFC like promotion and stuff. You know, is that like Ari Emanuel branding thing? Or if that's actually a friend of hers? It's really intriguing to me though. Because there is a sarcastic smart arse in myself that's like, Halle Berry, I remember when I was a kid, my dad took me to see Boomerang just because he wanted to be able to say, look, a mixed woman. So it's just hella funny to see, you know, the woman who has my fight style hanging out with the woman who used to have my haircut as a kid. Y'all can laugh at that. Cage Cousins, we are now at the main event of the evening. But on this fight, for me, it was more of a main event of the evening. I could blame a lot of things. Maybe it's this cold that's going around that gives you a cough and it makes it really hard for you to get it over, you know, and get it out of your system. You know, I'm glad it's not Corona. I could blame it on the fact that it's been cold, so it's like kind of a little bit harder to get as excited at the fights because the back door is open and makes you cold. I don't know. There's plenty of excuses I can make. Or it's because of the fact that there's so much hype on this and it's John Jones and I'm so over John Jones. I'm so over John Jones. I'm not surprised. People are like, oh my God, the fight ended in controversy. Can you name a time that a John Jones fight has not ended in controversy since his third title defense? Where do you people come from? Do you watch this sport? You probably don't. That's why I'm here. I'm here to help you. So, main event. John Bones Jones. It's funny. They spell cocaine really weird. They keep using this word bones for it. I've never heard that slang before. Versus Dominic the Devastator Reyes. He is a devastator. And he looked devastated after that fight by that decision. I don't know why. So here's some interesting things to think about. Dominic went in there with this theory. He's beat Chris Weidman, and Chris Weidman beat Anderson Silva. So that means that his mental game was ready to deal with John Jones. Anderson Silva. He put his hands down, his chin up, and did a predictable slip technique, rope-a-dope, that he's used multiple times that his opponent had studied and was going to keep punching on. Anderson Silva then came back and broke his leg, which is why, as I said earlier, I've never really liked Weidman because the way he checked the leg, it's not illegal, but you're doing it to be vindictive. So, Dominic Reyes saying that he had taken out Chris Weidman when Chris Weidman shouldn't even be in 205 and has lost his chin does not add up. I'd have to agree with John Jones there. Second one, he made the claim that he is a more well-rounded athlete, whether it's MMA or football. As if John Jones doesn't have two high-level NFL family members. Now, I'm supposed to ignore the fact that one of them played for the Patriots, which leads the league in rings, but also in getting caught cheating and saying, well, here's the fine, I'll pay it. Reminds me of a MMA team down in New Mexico. I digress. How does this fight start? Well, Dominic also claims that his boxing is better. When you're John Jones, do you need to have good boxing? Do you have to have good boxing? When you have a reach advantage of 7 to 10 inches on most of your opponents, do you need to stand in the pocket? Let's talk about martial arts for a minute. Boxing is a close-up art. The power comes from inside shots. Some people are long and rangy with their jabs. But for the most part, the arms are generally shorter than the legs. That's why it's called boxing. But this sport is called mixed martial arts, and it involves kickboxing. And what Dominic Reyes soon learned was that boxing, while it tends to get inside a rangy guy, it doesn't set up anything unless you follow up. So, Dominic Reyes, he answered leg kicks with leg kicks. Great. He knocked John Jones down. Or did he? Or did John Jones slip? We can never prove these things. We can never prove these things. Clearly, in rounds 1 through 3, Dominic Reyes started hot and heavy. He stayed inside John Jones' range. And he kept the pressure on. Here's where I take exception. Championship rounds start. Dominic Reyes looks winded. He looks tired. John Jones is smiling because he understands he's going to win the fight. Why is he going to win the fight? He's been winning fights for 10 years. He does this for a living. He fundamentally understands how to game the system. John Jones does not care about the popular vote, people. He's going to win the Electoral College. I wouldn't be surprised if you hired a private investigator. I bet you he took the judges to dinner the same week. He ain't stupid. He's playing the art of war, not the game of MMA. Okay? I can dislike this man and still understand and respect him. Let's remember the culture. Let's remember the science, people. What is knowledge? Knowledge is to know, to learn, to observe, and to respect. To knowledge something is to do the study of. John Jones, I study him. Know thy enemy, the way I study the opponents of all sports. The way I study the individuals that I like. John Jones clearly understood that his opponent was a power striker, but his power strikes had limitations. Jones also understands the game. And this is the argument that people keep having. They want to talk about the scoring of MMA as it should be. They're not talking about the scoring of MMA as it is. The scoring of MMA as it is, 2 points for a takedown. Not what you do with the takedown. Okay? 2 points. Now, I'm a big fan of the proposals. I saw Rose Namajunas said she would love to do a whole video talking about how scoring could be, given the Sancho background. I'm a fan. Let's start that conversation. Let's change legislation. But that's a state-run organization. That's not the UFC. The UFC does not own the judges. And that's a good thing. That's how you prevent corruption. It's called checks and balances, friend. It's amazing. People want democracy until they get democracy. Again, I'm not caping for John Jones. I am his first fan and his first hater. I'll tell you that every time. I want John Jones to lose, but I want him to lose the right way. I want him to lose by somebody who actually beats him. And Dominic Reyes did not beat him. The way I said on this very podcast a week ago, he's not going to beat him. I'm going to tell you why he's not going to beat him. When John Jones comes in and answers, and you start throwing a bunch of punches, he uses that 7 inches of range to get out of the way. You're going to call it running. It's called fighting. So if his back's turned to you, why are you still throwing punches? Why are you not kicking him in the back? Why are you not kicking him in the legs? Why are you not doing a front switch kick to the back of his thighs that are unprotected? Why? Because you're not a good enough fighter, Dominic Reyes, and you don't want to hear that. That's the way you do it. Is it illegal? No. You know what else is not illegal? Those trash leg to knee kicks, those oblique kicks that John Jones does. You know why they're not illegal? Because they're not illegal. Is it something you should do in sparring? Absolutely not. That's being a terrible training partner. He's trying to explain that to somebody. recently. They're like, oh man, those kicks are illegal. I said, show it to me. Show me in the rules where they're legal. It's frowned upon. You're being a D-bag when you do them. They're not illegal. We keep coming back to Marlo Stansfield, The Wire. You want it one way, but it's really another. Okay? When it comes to judging, that's what it is. Oblique kicks to the knee are trash. But I gotta tell you, if you were in a street fight, if you were in a street fight with somebody who gave 20 more pounds on you, okay? And I'm always very careful with this, because you never want to say some stuff like, well, if you're fighting for your life, right? If you're in a fight on the street, you're fighting for your life. That's why you should always avoid conflicts, in my opinion. Grow a sense of self-esteem where you can say no, no thank you. You know, somebody calls you some names, don't respond. Agree with them. You're right. I'm a punk. You're right. Have a good night. You know, diffuse the situation. So that way, when somebody threatens your life, you don't have to necessarily hold back. I know what you're saying. Sweet, come on, I'm a martial artist. I'm supposed to think about that. Yeah, when they stomping your head in, they're not gonna be thinking you're a martial artist, you held back on me. Why do I bring this up in a street fight? I gotta be careful with advice that I give you, because I do know enemies listen to this as much as friends listen to this. I will say this, oblique kicks to the knee go really good against overweight white supremacists who are trying to keep you from living on the planet. And that's all I'm gonna say about that. So going back to it, John Jones techniques are not illegal. Eye pokes are illegal, okay? But he's got, what, 6 fights before even Herb Dean had to, like, tell him in one of the fights, hey, if you do it again, I'm going to take a point, John, right? I don't care what you say. I'm going to tell you what I say. Herb Dean is the gold standard of judging, okay? So the second piece that we have to deal with in looking at this, John Jones, illegal knees to the head. Yeah, none of them really happened. We saw that against Anthony Smith. He changed that out of his game. I think actually, if I was to give some credit, I think Reyes should get credit for his defense against the eye pokes. Punching the fingers, attacking the fingers was really wise. The next person, Corey Anderson, should take note of that. Should early start in. Take note of that. Dominic Reyes did not initiate any takedowns on John Jones. You know why he didn't initiate him? Because they weren't going to go well. Why weren't they going to go well? He doesn't have the wrestling. He has wrestling defense. He has the jiu-jitsu. We saw that. But that's not the rules. The rules are, if you do a cosmetic takedown, you'll get that 2 points. John Jones point-fighted Dominic Reyes into victory. It's really unfortunate. It's sad. It's the truth. There's other things to think about. In the 4th round is your ability to change the momentum. Reyes was gassing. He just looked tired, breathing out of his mouth. If I saw it, the judges who were paying attention saw it. I'm not necessarily the biggest, how do I want to call it? I am not a follower of Rogan in the sense of that I will, you know, everything he says has to be true. I will not be that guy. I do give a lot of credence to his opinion. He's been watching UFCs, at least in my opinion. I have a memory of 10 years of this man sitting ringside and watching fights. He's watched fights nationally, he's watched them internationally. So when he looks over and says, this judge is not even paying attention, he believes it. He's more than the color commentator. He says things that are not the company line. He says those things that are generally gonna get you in trouble, but it's the truth. I do believe that that judge wasn't watching. But what the judges were watching, and they're gonna follow whether you're in Houston, Texas, whether you're in Dallas, Texas, whether you're in Los Angeles, California, Las Vegas, Nevada, Manhattan, New York, Detroit, Michigan, anywhere you want to have a fight, The principle is the same. The guy who looks winded is gonna look like he's wounded. And at the fifth round, if you are backing up and somebody is walking you down, you can see it, you can watch it, you can see literally Greg Jackson tell John, hey, I think I need this fifth round out of you. It's kind of close. John Jones turns on the juice he was saving all fourth round because he knew his opponent was tired. Turns on the juice, gets aggressive. Jumping knee to takedown. Attack, attack, attack. Get those points on the board. Get points on the board. Get points on the board. Dominic Reyes is really proud of his ability to, after the takedown, to come back up and try to and throw, land an elbow or hit a belly shot. If those don't wound your opponent, they're almost worthless. When you hit that on Weidman, it's because Weidman had no chin. But against John Jones, this guy has no body damage. You got to remember, he's avoided damage for 10 years of his career. He's the master of that. He doesn't have nagging injuries. He's not that guy on the UFC game where he comes in and there's something a little bit red about his body. Never. Never. So just getting happy about your little pot shots is not going to do it. So where do we go after this? Well, we're going to find out. On Saturday, Jan Błachowicz will fight Corey Anderson. The winner of that fight undoubtedly will become the light heavyweight contender and jump up. How soon will that fight happen? I don't know. How soon does John Jones need money? Right? How quickly does he need to get back to sandblasting hookers? We will find out. I would say from his social media activity, he feels threatened. I think the fact that he needed to watch the fight back immediately and post that he definitely won shows me that he definitely feels, in the eyes of public image, which does affect matchmaking, that there is a strong case for a rematch with Dominic Reyes. Dominic Reyes even said that John Jones said that their match will be epic. So here's what I see happening. Let's pretend John Jones fights again this year. I'm suspicious. My prediction is it'll probably end up John Jones versus Corey Anderson later this year, maybe November, I think. Wait, if this just happened in February, how much time does he need? So yeah, maybe August, John Jones comes back, fights Anderson. Anderson whips him like the way I think he will. Then there will be a definite rematch of John Jones versus Dominic Reyes for the number one contender spot. If Anderson does not beat John Jones, then Błachowicz and Reyes will fight for the number one contender spot, and we will see a rematch of Jones versus Reyes in February of 2021. Which is okay if we wait till 2021, because at least we'll have a bunch more Avengers movies for us to watch. But I think that's sort of the things that we can look at in terms of what goes next. If I'm Reyes, I would tune up some things. I'd really spend some severe time working on my kicks. Not just my leg kicks. I would definitely start working on getting some side kicks in there. The front side kick needs to come up. He needs to learn some spinning kick. And he needs to have a rangy kick that he can respond to Jones's long back roundhouse. He needs to immediately clap back. I think he got too in love with his power, and he thought that the belly shots were going to do damage. But in the eyes of these boxing coaches, it did not. Lesson learned. Jones, clearly his game plan worked. If I were him, you know, I would think about figuring out, you know, what is it going to be? It's going to take a little bit more to face Reyes again than just a David Goggins quote. I love David Goggins. I didn't see John Jones be uncomfortable. What do I mean by uncomfortable? After he did the takedown, he really didn't try to push it on the ground, which means, in my opinion, I think Jones is afraid of Reyes' jiu-jitsu. He's afraid of injury. If I were Reyes, I would look at that and think about that. If I were John Jones, I would tune that up. I would think a little bit more about the strikes that you could do. Maybe you've already buried, if you're Jones, if you buried the hatchet and you're in a very good place with Rashad, that might be somebody you want to train with who has that ability to throw short knees and aim them right into the chest and end fights that way. And that's who I would figure out that you need to start doing against Reyes. Lot of stuff to go on and think about going into the next fight. So I don't know. How did you guys feel about that fight? What are you interested in? What was it that stood out to you? Again, John Jones, to me, I'm glad this fight is over with, because I feel like, if I'm honest, I like getting the poison out of the way. So like kind of I'm getting over this cold. I'm glad that I was sick in the beginning of the year, so I'm not sick at the end of the year. What do I mean by that? McGregor fight is for McGregor fans. Jones fight is for Jones fans. McGregor fans, Jones fans, are not UFC MMA fans. I'll die on the hill about that. Talk to Jones fans. They can't tell me. You know, I heard them. They're over on the side of the room being loud. They can't tell you anything about the sport. They can't tell you anything else. They don't know anything about fighting. So I'm glad we got these out of the year so we can get back to real fighting again. The real fight happens in March. I could not be more excited about that. That's where I'm going to spend my time. Cage Cousins, it's been a pleasure. For those of you tuning in on the YouTube, bear with me. I obviously don't have any video, so I'm going to try some experiments with some visuals. Just be patient with me. I'm a work in progress. Signing off, this is the Programmable Animal. Sweet NBA, I'm getting it in. I hope you have a fantastic rest of the month. Things to look for, UFC on the 15th. Big fight. And then UFC Auckland on, I believe, the 23rd or the 22nd. What's 7 times 5? I'm so tired. Oh, my God. But that's going to be an incredible fight. Are you excited? I'm excited, man. Oh, my God. Anyways, I'm so glad we have fights back every Saturday. I'll see you soon. Without further ado, Gia!